I'm Maria Dudzak, and I am joined in the studio by Matt Eisenhower. He's from Peace Health Ketchikan Medical Center, the executive director of the foundation and community health development, and he is here to discuss some of the major healthcare reforms that are beginning to impact hospitals and doctors in our community. And also, we'll talk about what's driving some of this change, as well as what he believes is in store for the future of healthcare, not only nationally, but or not only just here in Ketchikan, but also nationally. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Maria.
Thanks for being here. And that's a mouthful there.
Sure is.
Lots of info, but. Want to also specify to our listeners, we're not speaking about the insurance aspect of it. Basically, we're looking at how this is impacting hospitals and doctors and kind of what it means to patients as well.
Sure.
But just so folks, if you have your insurance questions, don't think we can answer those today.
I could probably answer some just enough to be dangerous.
But, okay, very good. So start out, I guess, maybe explain a little bit about your background and
sure.
How you know about this topic or your familiarity with it?
Well, we were very fortunate a couple of years ago to be extended a grant from the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare to look at some innovative work and demonstration projects, especially in some rural settings, as to how to deliver healthcare better and cheaper, frankly. One of the things I think when I talk with folks, it's helpful to understand what's driving a lot of this. And there's a bunch of things, but maybe we can just start with that. But the truth of the matter is that last year we spent 19% of our gross domestic product. And I don't want to get too nerdy with numbers, but just to give you a little bit of a backdrop of that in our country, 19% of our gross domestic product. So 19 out of every $100 that we spend in our country goes toward healthcare. That is per capita about twice the average of industrialized nations. So we average about $8,200 per person that we spend on healthcare compared to all the other industrialized nations. That's less than half that. And frankly, some of our outcomes aren't that great. We're 17th when it comes to average life expectancy and some other things that I could quote. But the bottom line is we're spending about twice as much and not getting as great of outcomes. Now, add to that the different generational trends that are happening. We've got the baby boomer generation that's coming into age to utilize Medicare. There's 10,000 Medicare recipients that are added every day to our payrolls federally. That's 300,000 new a month, and only about 15,000 people a month are dying. So the net added effect of Medicare to our healthcare system is great. And then there's other factors that play into that. But those two are really, really big factors that over the last few years we've been trying to address. And so Centers for Medicaid and Medicare, those are the folks in our federal government who oversee Medicare and Medicaid. So those are folks who get public assistance for their health care, which in our community accounts for about half of all of our patients. The way we're paid as a hospital and clinic are through those public dollars that come from Medicare and Medicaid and other state funded programs. So that organization, CMS, a couple of years ago and even now is looking at trying to find better ways to give better care while reducing some costs. So I came on board to oversee that innovation program here at Peace Health. And so I've been doing that for about 2 years. And so here we sit today, and a lot of good things have happened. We've learned a lot. Some of the things that we've tried have worked, and some haven't. That's the point of demonstration projects. And so, yeah, that's a little bit of a backdrop to some of the challenges within our healthcare community.
And so going back to that paying 19% on healthcare, what is the reason for it being double the cost in the United States versus other industrialized countries?
Well, there's a slew of reasons. You know, if you talk to a lot of experts, which I'm not one, but when I hear them talk, a lot of this has to do with tort reform and the fact that we have to be very careful, and that's both good and bad. In our country, we are very, very careful in our health care. We want to make sure that it's safe. We do things with an abundance of care and treatment. And so the things, just to give an example, when you go to – well, I'll give you a personal example. My mom has breast cancer, and she battled it about 5 years ago and went into remission. And about 3 weeks ago, she had a little lump under her armpit. She went back in to see her doctor. And through the course of about 2 weeks, she had all sorts of tests. She had full body scans. She had CAT scans and MRIs of her brains and bone density scans. So we're very, very careful in how we treat our patients. In other countries, they wouldn't necessarily go through all of those types of tests and studies. And the reason why, generally speaking, physicians do that, it's not because necessarily, and I don't want to speak for all of them and make generalizations, but from what I hear from many studies and people that talk about this, a lot of what they learn in medical school and what they call evidence-based medicine is to make sure that they are careful and do things right because, frankly, they don't want to be sued for malpractice and other things. And so that impacts everything that we do. When it comes to our medical records, there are certain things that the government require of us for medical records. In our outpatient world, we just went through a big medical records change with our electronic medical record. For those folks who have been to the Peace Health Clinic recently in the last year, they've seen a new system that's much more robust. And so all of these little pieces, they start to add up, which costs somebody extra dollars. And, you know, that can be debated whether that's good or bad, but that's just the reality that we live in. So it really comes down to a kind of a philosophical, cultural conversation to say, are we okay spending $1 in $5 on our health care, or is there better ways of doing this so that we can be using some of those other monies for the arts or for business endeavors or for national defense and things of that nature?
And when you're speaking of health care reform, which is our topic here, mm-hmm. are you talking about changes that are the result of the Healthcare Reform Act? Mm-hmm. Or, okay, so it's not...
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's an overall change. And so is that in any way going to change some of this, the way things are currently
sure.
operating?
It has. You know, obviously the big Affordable Care Act went into effect or started to go into effect in 2010. And so every year that rolls along, there are different things. A lot of what gets the attention of the Affordable Care Act is the individual mandate that says that everybody needs health insurance. That's just one piece of the Affordable Care Act. There's lots of other things behind the scenes that people don't necessarily see that relate to insurance, relate to things pertaining to the hospital, relate to things pertaining to the pharmaceutical companies that sell drugs, the device companies that provide the different devices. One of the things that so you see a lot in the press and a lot of the conversation is about the individual mandate. That's an important piece on a lot of levels, and just to take us a little bit in a quick different direction, obviously, with our change of governor, there's been a lot of conversation about now one of his primary initiatives is to go ahead with that Medicaid expansion. And, you know, in our state, we've had this thing called the Medicaid gap, where there's been some people that were eligible for Medicaid for their income. And then there were other people at about 138% to poverty. And so in the state of Alaska, the poverty level is about $16,000 for an individual. So if you were at 138% of poverty, you're eligible for the marketplace insurance, where you can get subsidies from the federal government to get private insurance. But then there's this gap of people that made a little bit too much, so they weren't on Medicaid, but they didn't actually make enough so that they could enter the marketplace for those public subsidies. So we had this gap of people, about 20,000 to 40,000 people in the state of Alaska, depending on who you listen to. And probably a few thousand people in our community who were in this gap that wind up, getting no public assistance insurance and no access to private insurance with subsidies. So the new governor has made it clear that that's something that he wants to enact. And the reason why that's important for us as Peace Health and providers in this community is that when we have what we call uncompensated care, meaning that we give care to people that we don't get paid for, obviously to run a business, that has to be spread out over the people who can pay. It's just like going into a store and, you know, you have to build in things like spoilage when it comes to groceries or even shoplifting. You know, those are still real costs that have to be then passed on to other people. So that's some example of, you know, the Medicaid expansion, some of the good changes that I personally believe are related to keeping healthy people healthy, and simple things like screening for mammograms or colorectal screenings eventually will be required that health insurance companies do that. With no out-of-pocket to you or me when I go do that. And the reason why that's important is we need to incentivize people to get these screening pieces before they get sick, because if they get sick and then let that disease process go on untreated, then it becomes very, very, very expensive compared to just doing a little preventive maintenance. So same thing with a vehicle. You know, if you don't do the preventive maintenance with the vehicle and then something happens and you get a big bill at the end of this versus if you just did a little bit on the front side.
And that is a big part of the Healthcare Reform Act is preventive, mm-hmm. covering a lot of different things for different people, depending on your age, your gender. Have you seen more people coming in for preventive care since the bill was enacted?
In our clinic, we're beginning to see that. I think that maybe not as fast as we expected. I still think that there's, frankly, a lot of information. That's a great reason why we're having this conversation today. I think that there's not a great spot for some of these resources. We're actually, we hired what we call a financial care coordinator, and that person actually works with people to help them understand some of what they're entitled to in their insurance and help them navigate those hurdles. Because oftentimes a lot of people, out of fear or they just don't know what's covered, they don't seek the type of care that would be good for them, especially younger folks, you know, folks in their 20s and 30s and that maybe have some chronic diseases like diabetes that they just don't know how to access health care, even if they have health insurance. So we've seen a little bit of an uptick, but maybe not as much as we would have expected at this point.
And it is scary when you go and you don't know, am I going to mm-hmm. get charged for this? Am I not? Are there ways that you mentioned that someone can be there to kind of help you look mm-hmm. at your insurance and let you know what is or isn't covered?
Yeah, what we advise people to do, and I know this is challenging because it's even challenging for me sometimes to understand, but at the end of the day, everybody's insurance policy is very different. And so you really can't get around just calling your insurance company and ask them specific questions. You know, I'd like to go in and just have a doctor's visit. You know, if I'm 30 years old, I want to go in and have a regular doctor's appointment. You know, what does that mean to me? What will that cost me? And that, you know, 5 or 10 minute phone call is very, very important. The theory behind all of this, or at least a big piece of Affordable Care Act, is to make sure that people don't have a whole lot of out-of-pocket expenses for preventative care. So if you go in for just a preventative visit, you know, a well-child exam, for example, or just a regular yearly exam for you, there shouldn't be much, if any, out-of-pocket expense for you. Ironically, if you go in once there's a problem, there will be some out-of-pocket expense for you in most instances. And it's tough to really talk in generalizations because each insurance policy is so different, which is part of the challenge that one of the things that the Affordable Care Act is trying to fix is try to bring some continuity, just like in other industries when it comes to car insurance and things like that, that there is some continuity of standards of care.
And there is under that certain things that are required to be covered by insurance. Is mm-hmm. that true now, or that's getting kind of worked its way in?
It's worked in, and the challenge for us is there's a lot of grandfathered policies. So if there's older policies, they might not have to abide by these new standards. But the new policies, and again, mammograms and colorectal screenings, colonoscopies, that's a great example, is that in the future, and as these old policies are being grandfathered out, all those policies will mean that you can go get a mammogram, a yearly mammogram with no out-of-pocket expense to you. Now, it's interesting because the insurance companies, the private insurance companies, and the public insurance companies, which, again, I referenced before with Medicaid and Medicare, they understand that at the end of the day, it's better for them to invest in those screenings to catch that early, because if it's treated early, obviously it's far less expensive for them to pay for that treatment through the course of the time with the disease.
Okay, and mention this is a call-in show. We have about 15 minutes left. So if you have questions, you can give us a call here at 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. And I printed off some information about things that should be covered, I guess, under the Affordable Care Act. Are mm-hmm. there things maybe people would be surprised to know it's covered? Have you had people, just unaware that, I could get help for this or whatever the situation may be?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm sure there are. I do typically think, again, getting back to what we just said, a lot of folks are used to thinking, let me step back and answer a little bit differently. I think for many, many years in our country, it's ironic that we use the word health care because, there's not a whole lot of care for the health in our system. It's more care for the sick. Mm-hmm. So really should be called sick care or something along those lines. Other countries are better at this, I think, frankly, than we are. And I actually believe, in the 40s and the 50s, we were probably a little bit better. And there's a myriad of reasons why that's the case. I believe there needs to be a shift not only by just our doctors and hospitals and things like that, but there needs to be a shift by individuals to understand that it's important that healthy people keep themselves healthy, and that so that you don't necessarily think, okay, I only go to the doctor when I'm sick, or I only go see the nurse when I'm sick. Instead, we need to begin to think more, I go to a health coach, I go to a diabetes educator, I go to a doctor when I'm healthy, because they can help me stay healthy or possibly screen me for things that might point me in a direction that some things could be coming down the road. For instance, maybe I'm prone to diabetes. I don't have it right now, but I could be prone to it. So if I change my diet and exercise and things like that. So I think, the cultural shift of understanding that it doesn't happen by chance that some other countries stay healthier than we do. The other thing I would add is that perception of people related to healthcare in our country is very much rooted in the haves and the have-nots. If you have health insurance and you have access to a doctor, you really kind of sit around and go, what's the problem? Everything seems to be fine. But if you are uninsured or underinsured, I think is what we're talking about here in the sense, or maybe don't fully understand your insurance, you'll be leery to access that healthcare with the doctors and the clinics and things like that. And so there's these two perceptions of our healthcare. The truth of the matter is our system right now is not ready to deal with the masses. If everybody got the care that they needed, and everybody had insurance, and everybody had the ability to access, we would have lines longer than some other places around the world. I know there's criticism sometimes with universal health care that there's long wait times. If everyone in our country had the same access, there would be longer wait times. I don't know if that makes sense or not. But the truth of the matter is that there's a segment of our country that has insurance, and they have access. So I think to answer your question more broadly, I think we all need to look at our health differently and understand that it takes work and effort to stay healthy and not just wait until we're sick.
Okay, and we do have a caller. Joel is on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is if you could describe or talk a little bit about how the Affordable Care Act covers mental health illnesses in particular, and then also drug and alcohol treatment and abuse. Those problems are pretty severe in our community, and maybe a little bit about what Peace Health is doing to address those things. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks. Great question, Joel.
Sure. Thank you, Joel. You know, at this point in time, I can speak a little bit to some of the demonstration projects and grants that the Affordable Care Act has given. I know the state of Alaska, we just were awarded a behavioral health grant for Prince of Wales Island. There is a very similar grant that was also awarded to Ketchikan that's not being run by Peace Health. It's being run by another behavioral health coalition. So I can speak, and I actually oversee the behavioral health coalition program on Prince of Wales. One of the biggest things that the state is asking for is to go beyond the traditional ways in which we deal with mental health and the broader behavioral health issues, drug and alcohol abuse and things of that nature. In the past, it's mostly been dealt with or approached through the lens of clinicians. We know that in successful areas of the lower 48 and other places around Alaska, to successfully deal with mental health and behavioral health issues, there really needs to be multi-sectoral interaction. What I mean by multiple sectors, so things like the school system, law enforcement, healthcare, the religious community, you know, all of those pieces come into play when it comes to very complicated dealing of behavioral health and as it relates to drug and alcohol. I think that healthcare facilities can be the catalyst for this, but we don't have all the answers. There's so many deep-rooted issues. So, you know, we have psychiatrists that deal with kind of the pharmacological pieces. We have psychologists. We have some social workers. We have other healthcare. But we need to engage law enforcement. We need to understand how they play a role. We need to understand religious leaders and understand how spirituality impacts things. So the Affordable Care Act, you know, again, I'm not an expert in all aspects of it, but that's an example of where they are using lump sum grants to help springboard some of these learnings so that we can do better. So these grants that in the Prince of Wales and here in Ketchikan, it's a four-year grant. The first year is just an exploratory year in which we go out and we do an assessment and we ask questions. And then once we get that information, we take that information back to the state with some recommendations of interventions related to what we learn of the greatest needs in our communities. That's just one example, and I'm sure there's more.
Okay, and the Affordable Care Act does require insurance to cover alcohol and drug use counseling and services and things, correct?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question.
I'm pretty sure that, that is the case. But again, as you said, some things are grandfathered. And so
that's right.
If your insurance is not under one of those, you have to figure it out, I guess, through your insurance. I know my insurance does cover those types of things. It covers all of the key points that are in the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, and I wish we had our financial care coordinator here because she could answer some of those questions more precisely than I can. But I can tell you again what she has taught me and what she teaches others is, again, to call your insurance company and then also ask the date of the insurance policy when it was actually begun, because that date can then help you as you read through some of these grandfather pieces to know when your insurance plan actually started. So the newer, the better, obviously.
And what is it's true of any insurance is you have to read and look, because it may cover a certain number of treatments or going to a treatment center for a certain period of time or something. And then at some point it probably goes to out of pocket. But again, we'd have to look at the policies, and I don't have that before us. Again, if there's some questions, we have a few minutes left. 225-9655, 1-800-557-5723. And Matt, going back to something you were talking about, it's a huge part of healthcare is people taking care of themselves. Our society doesn't necessarily do that. You know, a lot of eating out, fast food, high fat and sugar diets. How is Peace Health working to try to get people to change that attitude? And how can you? I mean, that's a whole national issue.
Well, you know, Americans are fiercely independent, right? You know, and Alaskans are even more so. And that's something that that I'm grateful for. And there's a lot of things that we've been able to do as a culture because of that. Just a couple thoughts to throw out. If you ask insurance companies if they are to look at the primary indicator of when a patient costs them more than others, it is obesity. Obese patients, when it comes to disease states, are twice as expensive as non. So that's a huge thing to work through. And frankly, I don't have great answers. And I think that that's where we need to engage some of these other sectors to understand within school system through education and things of that nature.
And it is also, though, when there are, say, reforms in the school lunches and things, people get up in arms because, you know, don't tell my child what to eat kind of a thing.
Yeah, I believe in leadership and education. I think just to give an example, Cleveland Clinic is a world-renowned hospital setting in Cleveland, Ohio. And they made a commitment last year about smoking. And I think they lovingly and politely made a decision to say that we wanted to lead by example. And if you're a smoker, you know, not everyone is fit to work at Cleveland Clinic. And so they don't allow smoking and they don't allow smokers. And if you smoke, then you need not apply. And if you're a current smoker, when they started this policy, they went through a lot of effort to help people quit. And they paid for a lot of programs and things of that nature. But they wanted to lead. And they just simply said not everyone is kind of fit to work at Cleveland Clinic, and they made that decision. And now they're working on obesity. And, you know, not all states actually I think when I talked to the person, there's about 30 states that you can do that legally.
I was going to say it seems almost like discrimination.
Well, it is, and it's and I'm not a legal expert, but basically it has to do with whether or not it's a protected class of people. And smoking apparently, or smokers are in some states. Again, I'm not a legal expert, but someone told me recently that Alaska Airlines has that same policy. So I presume that that is legal in the state of Alaska, and maybe someone who's an expert could call in and let us know.
Okay, and we do have another caller, Joan. Good morning, Joan.
Hi. So substance abuse. Recently, there's been no alcohol detox at the hospital, and I assume now that the Affordable Care Act is implemented that the hospital will be doing alcohol detox again.
Yeah, that's something that we've been talking about. Ken Tongis, who's our new chief CAO, I keep wanting to say executive, but you know, that is a piece that we know there's been a detox, and there's some technical things as to what it means to be a medical detox facility that you know, we're trying to make sure we understand that and move forward. That's a sticky one, and I really don't have anything to say other than the fact that we are looking into it. And I would backstep again and say that there's no doubt that Peace Health as a healthcare facility needs to be a leader in this and helping understand how best to come alongside other resources. And that's a broader conversation when it comes to healthcare in Alaska as to, you know, we need to be able to do certain things really well, but also understand where our lane is, where we can't be doing things. So, Joan, I wish I had some more precise answers to give you other than the fact that it is on our radar. And I would encourage you to keep speaking through different community organizations to help us know that is something that our community needs.
Okay, thank you very much, Joan. And actually, we're running out of time here. Is there anything else you wanted to add or finish up with?
No, Maria, I appreciate the opportunity to continue conversations. And I think that in my new role as community health development, it's something that hospitals aren't necessarily accustomed to always doing in the past. You know, we're great at fixing you when you're broken. We're maybe not as good as keeping you healthy when you're not. And also, as the two phone callers have noted, with those very expensive things to our culture with behavioral health and mental health and substance abuse. And I would say that Peace Health definitely has that on our radar and is trying to understand it better. And we need input from the community to know exactly what's needed and how we can do a better job addressing it.
Was there a detox facility at some time?
It's my understanding. And there was years. It's been years, and again, I'm relatively new with 2 years here in Ketchikan. But it's my understanding there was. And again, without getting too technical, what happens in our current setting is we wind up by default sometimes admitting people to our hospital and treating them to the best of our ability through their detox process. But I think, as Joan pointed out, that having a detox center means something completely different and gives patients some different types of care that are probably important to look at.
Okay, and sounds like a great discussion and great to get that idea out there.
Sure.
And hope to see that moves forward.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for
Thank
joining
you, Maria.
Me. Matt Eisenhower of Peace Health Ketchikan Medical Center.